Hey Retrospectors, for our third birthday, we've filmed an hour-long Q&A answering your questions.
We discuss our favourite facts, how we make the show, and what we've learned along the way.
If you're already supporting us on Patreon, thank you. You can watch it right now at patreon.com/retrospectors.
And if you're not a Patreon member, sign up. You don't have to pay a thing to become a free member and watch it now.
So check it out. It's free. patreon.com/retrospectors.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's April 11th, 1936, and another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Aria, Rebecca, and Ollie, the Retrospectors.
So it was on this day that Billy Butlin opened his first holiday camp in the English resort town of Skegness. But actually, he had already welcomed his first camper, because so fervid had the publicity campaign around the opening been that a woman called Frieda Monk from Nottingham was so keen she had turned up a day early by mistake. She got off the bus outside the holiday camp, where Billy Butlin and all his top people were sitting around preparing for the opening the next day, and they noticed this woman. You know, I can just imagine her in her little brown suit and hat with her little luggage bag getting off the bus. And so they had given her dinner and a chalet anyway, and so she became the first ever Butlin's camper.
I just think of all of those days when you're like in the final throes of trying to get everything ready, and how that, you know, the paint is all still drying and things are half hung and everyone's in a state of panic. They must not have been ready for Frieda Monk. They must have been like, oh God, positions, positions, everybody start the rides, do the things, fire up the stoves.
Yeah. So if you don't know what Butlin's is, I think it's worth saying for international audiences in particular, it's a holiday camp. Which they did have all around the world, but we didn't have in Britain. It wasn't a traditional British holiday, even though we had lots of local seaside resorts like Skegness. People used to go and stay in a B&B generally. And so families would get kicked out by usually the landlady early in the morning, well, after breakfast, hence the name, right? So Billy Butlin had worked at a fairground in Barry Island in Wales and witnessed families getting kicked out from B&Bs at 9 o'clock in the morning, where it's freezing cold. You know, there's only so many times you go around the carousel and sit on the beach having an ice cream in the freezing cold before you want to go back into your hotel room, particularly when the baby needs a nappy change or whatever. And that wasn't possible. And he had come from an international background. He'd grown up in Canada and South Africa, and he had seen holiday camps working in those places and thought, aha.
He said, I felt sorry for myself, but I felt even sorrier for the families with young children as they trudged along, wet and bedraggled, or forlornly filled in time in amusement arcades until they could return back to the boarding houses. It really doesn't paint the most sort of rosy picture of a British seaside holiday. That, you know, having grown up in Australia, you go to the beach and you're just out all day because you could depend upon the weather being pretty nice. But that's not the case here.
Not only were you exposed to the elements, but also if you wanted to get out of the rain and the cold and, you know, stop the kids from whinging, you had to keep paying for new activities for them to do. And obviously the average working family didn't have huge amounts of disposable income, especially at that time. And so what the genius of... So not only is it offering this sort of collective experience, you know, you've got all these attractions at your disposal included with your payment. So it's this sort of sociable, open atmosphere, but they're also offering you privacy and autonomy, which is something that you didn't have when you were staying in some, you know, crabby old widow's boarding house on the seafront. The idea that you could go back into your little chalet, and I mean, they were extremely basic. They didn't have hot running water or anything like that. But this idea that you could have this little miniature holiday house to call your own was something...
But it's astonishing, isn't it, that success that came of this single ad that he took out in the Daily Express in 1936 that was promising this, you know, three meals a day and free entertainment.
For 35 shillings a week, by the way, £1.75.
Yes, right. But it was so popular... By the time it opened its doors, it was already completely booked for the entire season.
Yeah, because it opened to coincide with the Easter holiday. And the official opening was by the pioneering aviatrix, Amy Johnson.
Well,
it's quite clever to open it at this time of year, though, isn't it? I mean, I know that's what all holiday parks do, obviously. They open for the spring season kind of in hope more than expectation because, you know, the big season is the summer, but you need to get all the staff there and whatever. But then, with a concept that had never been proven before, it kind of made sense not to do it in the summer where everywhere was nice and hot, but to take advantage of the few days of spring sunshine where people are desperate and hungry to get out there to the beach.
Mm. It's funny that you mentioned the celebrity who opened the park, because it came to be a place that stars of the era went to perform. And actually, none of these names mean anything to me, but perhaps they will to you. They had Gracie Fields, Essie and Doris Waters, Will Fry and Will Fife. Anything? Anyone?
Gracie Fields. Yeah. She was okay. Famous.
Cricketer Len Hutton, Len
what
Harvey.
What did he do? what's a cricketer going to do? A Butlins?
Oh, well, Len Harvey was interesting. He was the light heavyweight boxing champion, which seems like a contradiction in terms. But he sparred with a kangaroo. So that was his contribution to the Butlins experience.
Okay, that's good, actually. I take it back.
Really, what they're known for, though, is having been a first rung on the ladder for a whole generation of sort of light entertainers of the 1960s and 70s, right? So Benny Hill, Des O'Connor, Cliff Richard, Jimmy Tarbuck. They all started as Redcoats, which was the names of the entertainers who, as it was, not past tense, actually still are, the names of the entertainers who walk around the site and look after the kids and put on the shows. Ringo Starr, when he was Richard Starkey, played Butlin Skegness in the Rock Ballroom with the band Rory Storm and the Hurricanes. And it was actually apparently at Butlin Skegness that he kind of decided to join the Beatles.
Wow.
Yeah, apparently Lennon and McCartney came and saw the band play and then approached him afterwards and asked if he wanted to be in their band.
It was between him and Jimmy Tarbuck to be drummer.
The Redcoats have such a fascinating history as well. One being that they weren't supposed to exist in the first place. Billy Butlin had thought that the attractions of the camp, you know, it had a boating lake, swimming pool, ballroom, putting greens, etc.
Tudor Bar. Don't forget the Tudor Bar. That's hilarious. And check out the photo of the Tudor Bar. Oh. It looks like a carry-on set. It's incredible.
Well, it had all these amazing facilities that certainly hadn't been in one place before. But Butlin noticed early on that the campers, probably, you know, due to sort of innate British reticence, seemed kind of shy, not keen to mingle outside their family groups, which is pretty crucial for the success of the camp. So what he did was ask this guy called Norman Bradford, who was an engineer working for Butlin's. He asked him to get on stage and tell some jokes. I mean, obviously, the context being lost to history, but we have to assume that Norman Bradford was funny.
Yeah, otherwise that's just cruel.
Yeah, and also, and this is, and you'll see this fact in loads of different places, but one part of it that isn't so widespread is that Bradford was also asked during his comedy set to explain a little bit about the camp and how it worked. And that's still a major Redcoat duty. So Billy Butlin immediately saw how useful this was, and he sent Norman Bradford into town to get some blazers made up. Bradford originally suggested yellow or blue, which were the colours of Butlins, but he said that red has a more jolly vibe to it. So the Redcoats were born from that. But the Redcoats, in early Butlins history, they weren't just entertainers. They were almost like holiday reps. Mm. And they acted as leaders for the dining halls. This is a crazy thing, right? So there were so many people on these camps. There were up to 10,000 people staying at some of the camps, that they had assigned dining halls, right? And the dining halls were sort of almost like your school house while you were staying at Butlin. So you had inter-dining hall games and competitions, and the Redcoats acted as the leaders. And even though you would only be staying for a week, right, they had a campers committee with a representative chosen from a holidaymaker at each dining hall. Mm-hmm. They would act as judges in the glamorous granny, knobbly knees type competitions, but also they would raise any complaints or suggestions at a weekly meeting.
Wow.
In 1965, Butlin Skegness was host to the UK's first commercial monorail. And that's the other thing, you'd go to Butlin's to taste the entertainment of the future. They were the first place to have Dodgems. Again, Butlin's sort of fairground background coming to the fore there. During the war, he bought a load of fairground rides when no one had need for fairground rides during that six-year period. All of the waltzers and teacups and carousels and whatever that had basically laid dormant and gathering moss during the war were bought up by Billy Butlin and put into Butlin's. So when it reopened after the war, there was this huge rush back from this hungry public that again wanted to be entertained. He was always on that. And actually, hot on the success of my Googling what happened to the woman who played the sun baby in Teletubbies a few weeks ago, I thought I would try my luck with where is the Butlin's monorail now, because it was dismantled in the 90s. I thought it might be, you know, at a fun fair in Cyprus or something, because monorails have second lives, don't they? Mm. No, I was greeted with the heartbreaking image of it rotting away in a random farmyard in Lincolnshire. Oh. Like it is falling apart and left by the side of the road. That's what happened to the Butlins monorail.
Guys, let's raise money. Let's buy it. Let's restore it. And it can be the top attraction at Retroland that we have been.
I just wonder whether it was a classic thing of like someone who does scrap metal said, oh, don't worry, I'll take it away for you, and then just dumped it somewhere.
Pushed it over. Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned World War II. World War II was actually such a winner for Billy Butlin. Yeah. I mean, he had a fantastic World War II. Not only did he buy up all this super cheap fairground equipment, but the War Office asked him, well, they told him, I guess, that's the meaning of commandeer, right? The War Office commandeered the Skegness camp to be a training camp for the Royal Navy. It was designated HMS Royal Arthur. And actually, despite being targeted by German bombers 52 times, it reopened in time for the 1946 summer season, which is real can-do spirit. But the interesting thing was, is that they liked the camp so much, they actually commissioned Butlin to build more with the agreement that he would buy them off them super cheap after the war.
Yeah, for 40% of the value.
Yeah, and turn them all into resorts. So, and it was just in time for the 1950s boom. There were more working class people able to afford holidays.
Also built-in breadwinners who'd go back to their families and say, you know where I was posted during the war? It's actually a really nice campsite. Let's go and stay there.
Yeah. Half of it wasn't bombed. It's amazing. Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Was there a mechanical fault with the jet? Could one of these two heroes have made a mistake?
Ditch the ads and get a Sunday episode when you join Club Retrospectors. Patreon.com/retrospectors.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.